there are others that wish to testify at this time. Dr. Wilson, would you like to further comment on some of the work of the committee? I know your statement was very positive, that we are recognizing that there's just a lot of work to be done out there, and we must do a lot. It's not just going to be a band-aid situation, and it's going to take a lot of public support in order to accomplish that. But I'd like to have you make some reflections, that we have no other person testify here either at this time. Over.
All right, Senator. Just one further curlicue on the long-term health care plan that would require at least of the new people coming on screen for the longevity bonus program, and I don't know how long into the future that's going to survive with our budgetary problems. I hope it will survive.
But I think it'll survive, all right.
Good. But to require that 40% of the $250, say, 100 of it, go toward buying long-term health care insurance, so, and make it voluntary for the first people that are presently in the plan, because long-term care in nursing homes or the home is an insurable risk. It's an insurable risk because we don't live forever. The average duration of life in a nursing home is 2.3 years, I think. A few live 15 or 20 years, but most of them die within a year or so. So it's, therefore, if the actuaries can cost it, and $100 a month, at starting at age 55 at least, will buy long-term health care insurance. So that cohort of people wouldn't, if they would be willing to do that with the longevity bonus, would not have to spend down to poverty when their insurance is going. Now, with regard to the task force itself, we're struggling with these two big problems: cost containment and universal access. We really want, as all of you want, I'm sure, and believe that everybody should get health care. Willie Horton on 4th Avenue, the governor, Wally Hickover, and Juneau, they all ought to have the same access to good health care. I think most people can espouse that idea. We're less sure on the task force that everybody, having said that, is willing to pay for it or pay their share insofar as they can, and they don't have a lot. But if you're responsible to say that you think everybody should get health care, and then to say in the next breath that we're willing to pay for it, well, that's a problem. But we realize that we don't stand a chance of getting health care to everybody unless we can put a lid on the health care cost. Sharp rise, as I said in opening remarks. Some of the things we're talking about that is to set a global budget that is a fixed amount for the state of coming year, that this is all we're going to spend on health care, and you providers, you included, you got to divvy up the pie. You fight about that, but there's all you got for the hospitals and the docs. A lot of problems with that, obviously. Nobody likes it. Like rate setting, it doesn't work very well in the market, but I'm not sure the outline.
The others are not able to participate if you don't come forward to the microphone yet, but you sure are welcome to do so. Please do. But otherwise, they can't get the benefit of the question, and the doctor, you might be able to initiate the question on the mic here and respond to it. Thank you.
Another problem with global budgeting and rate setting is that we don't control all the players. There's the Indian Health Service and the Medicare, indeed, and the Medicaid, which is half state, half federal. We don't have our hands around it, so how can you enforce a global budget, so to speak, when you don't have your hands around the whole system? We're struggling with the question of manpower and distribution of care, particularly the rural areas, not so much the ones that are covered by the Indian Health Service, because they very well indeed, but for the rest of us, we're struggling with the malpractice issue that the questioner here raised, and how much of our healthcare costs are due to defensive medicine, doctors either not doing things for fear of being sued or ordering too many tests just to protect themselves. Overall, those latter costs are not a very big part of the $800 billion that we spend annually in the country for health care, because the best estimates, and they're hard to come by, are only around $20 or $25 billion are spent on malpractice premiums plus defensive medicine, which is estimated to be about $30,000 per doctor a year. So overall it's not, but it does, so far as doctors are concerned, 1/6, about 18% of your bill from a doctor is estimated to represent malpractice insurance plus defensive medicine. So that's a significant bill. 18%. So the task force so far has suggested, is going to recommend several court law reforms. There's a long list of them, traditional court law reform things, which the senator and most of his colleagues in the legislature are sick and tired of it, because we've been hearing about it off and on since the 60s. But the task force so far has recommended that the statute of limitations for a malpractice action brought on behalf of a child under 6 years old be limited until his 8th birthday, not until his 21st birthday, plus 2 years on beyond that, the normal statute. A child can bring a lawsuit for as long as 23 years after their virginity. And that's much too long, in the opinion of many. That's one recommendation making. Another recommendation is concerning obstetrical care, because a lot of we want to encourage obstetrical care deliveries in rural areas by competent family doctors. We just don't dare do it by and large. So we're recommending that on a lawsuit arising out of an untoward event during labor and delivery, that in order to prove that negligence, there be a higher standard of proof, namely clear and convincing evidence, rather than the usual one of preponderance of the evidence. Preponderance of the evidence means 51%. Clear and convincing is a little bit higher, and still not as high as a criminal proof, which is beyond a reasonable doubt. So, in other words, make it a little harder to win a lawsuit. Gain would be that there might be more obstetrical care done in rural areas, or that in cities, including Palmer, Russell area, and Anchorage and Fairbanks, that OB doctors, highly trained people, would stay in practice longer. They stopped doing it at about age 50 or so, and among the reasons for their stopping is the malpractice situation. They get them out of college.
The ladies are paying $80,000 to $90,000 a year, like in Palmer,
And Dr. Barbara Dottie from Watsonville here testified to us at our last meeting that she's a family practitioner, and she has a minor part of her care is obstetrical care, but she has to pay $38,000 a year. And I don't know how old Barbara is. She looks awful young to me. Everybody looks awful young to me these days. But I'll just bet you she's not going to go on doing that until she's 50. I think the major recommendation that the task force is going to make about court has already been made by the malpractice subcommittee of this task force. I'm the chair of that, and we decided unanimously at our last meeting, and I think we had 7 people there on the subcommittee, that the present system of handling malpractice cases in Alaska be changed to one called called a mandatory alternative dispute resolution. That generally means arbitration. In other words, bringing the case before an arbitrator or a panel of, say, three, a lawyer, a doctor, and some other person to decide both as to whether an injury really did arise out of the medical care and what the reward should be. Now, that would be the only way you could go. It would be mandatory. That's the only route in order to preserve constitutional questions. You have to have that appealable. Well, it's our understanding, Senator and others so far, that the appeal would not start the whole process over again to go to jury, but the appeal would only be to see if the law was followed by the arbitrators, that the facts justified the conclusion, and that the arithmetic, say, was right in calculating the award, but not to rehash the whole thing.
Weren't you, at least in the initiation of your membership in the committee, weren't you thinking of the resolution of court in a more equitable way would also go to be the carrot to attract the medical community, particularly the doc, into going along with some of the recommendations of the committee insofar as rate setting and so on. I think this is all a whole package, partially politically thought of, and maybe you'd like to comment on that.
I think that's right, Jay. The task force kind of put together a package that's appealing in the whole, that's going to make everybody a little bit mad. Because all parties, including doctors, hospitals, and lawyers, and legislators, and healthcare workers, and insurance industry people, and so forth, they're going to have to give up a little bit. And it's my feeling, and we talk a lot in medical circles about this, is that the physician, if we could get some relief on the malpractice issue, not so much, it's not the cost so much that bothers us, we've learned to live with that, as the discomfort day by day of feeling threatened by the lawsuit. There can be some relief on that and some relief on the paperwork lizard and the wrangling with insurance companies that goes on between doctor's offices and insurance companies. If those two areas could be eased somehow, we go along with a lot of things. Rate setting doesn't make the doctors very happy, but incidentally, they have a proposal. The State Medical Association together with the State Hospital Nursing Home Association has a package of recommendations. With the offer to hold the line on increases in prices to the consumer price index, not the medical consumer price index, but the general consumer price index. So we're working with those groups in the task force.
Yes,
yeah,
the
okay?
Sure. One moment. Does anybody out there have a question in Cordova or Valdez?
I don't have a question. This is Dan Moeller in Valdez, but I have a statement I'd like to make.
Okay. I didn't realize that there was somebody willing to make a statement. We'll hear you now, Dan. I apologize.
Thank you. Once again, this is Dan Moeller in Valdez. First of all, I want to encourage all of you in this effort. I think it's an extremely important issue in the state. I want to mention that at the Valdez Hospital, we have many of these same costs. Our liability insurance is one of our highest costs. We pay unusually high costs for health insurance for our employees because for some reason, employees of hospitals are rated higher. And I can certainly relate with some of these horror stories that have been told. I was in the last year in one of the larger hospitals in the state, and I was in there for less than 24 hours because of a kidney stone problem. And the bill was about $10,000. for less than 24 hours. I was just amazed at that cost, and I think that all of us would certainly be willing to hurt a little bit, especially when you look at the idea that there's going to be wider coverage, and therefore if there's more coverage for everyone that lives in the state, we could take some small hits in other areas. I think the overall issue is that we certainly want coverage for everyone. And, well, let me say this, that I think we have to be careful with just putting the burden on hospitals or doctors. I need it, think it needs to be shared with everyone. The hospitals in the state, I believe the vast majority of them are struggling, like everyone else is, to make ends meet. So that's about all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Comment about the cost. A number of people, a lot smarter than I across the country, think that there's enough money in the system already. I'm not sure that we on the task force are convinced that if we had universal health care here, it wouldn't cost more. But a lot of people think that if the money that's already in the system, say the $1.5 billion we spend on health care in Alaska, and we're used more wisely, and that we could take care of everybody quite easily. If preventive care were emphasized, if prenatal care were emphasized, if people had places to go to readily other than emergency rooms for kinds of illnesses that don't really belong in emergency rooms, we wouldn't necessarily need any more money than we have, and particularly if the administrative cost is reduced. One of the beauties of the Canadian system, which someone here referred to, is that their hospitals, who have a global annual budget that is good in the long term, they don't have any billing department. They don't need it. You know, they've already been paid, or maybe they're paid month by month, I don't know, but they don't have to. Out
the, the paperwork for the docs with the single payer system would be hugely reduced. I see a very, very competent physician in Juneau. I've used his name in the past, I won't now, but I use him as my primary care whenever I do have a problem. And one doctor does have assistance in the medical section, but has the incoming intake nurse, probably a secretary. Two in the business department, accounting and billing. I suppose he does have not only an MD himself, but probably does have a nurse practitioner practicing in the system with him. But the overhead is at least 4 to 2. And that has to do everything with insurance funds. I'm okay with
it. Okay.
Would you like to comment, please?
About that, my husband had the salary section. And since we had the Medicare, my state insurance, and his state insurance, there were 15 providers. We had 45 clinics at that time. We had to handle it. And I did most of the paperwork. It took a year. I never was sure, you know, about the outcome. And my husband said, if he got sick again, just let him die, so he didn't want him to complain about the paperwork for another year.
See, Ms. Turner, those are part of the costs of the present system which are not figured in. All your time trying to figure out all that paperwork, that's part of the cost of the system, but it isn't calculated because there's no dollars connected to it.
Ms. Campbell, you were trying to get the floor.
Yes, but I put this down
the pole. You have to hold it.
Uh-huh.
If you can, it's not really the best.
No, I was just to respond to Dr. Wilson, but I think that we don't hold the providers accountable enough for the cost. A lot of the things that we tend to put off as defensive medicine, I think there's a profit motive in there. We get so many new machines, one place gets a new machine and the other one has to have it, and suddenly everybody has to have this test, which is very expensive, but somehow somebody's got to pay for this machine. And we label that defensive medicine, and I don't think there is an accountability factor in there.
Are there any people in Valdez or Cordova that wish to testify at this time, either community?
This is Brian Gilbert in Cordova. Yeah, I'd like to say a few things. Hospital here in Cordova, and Cordova has a 23-bed facility over here, nursing home and hospital. One of the things that we get into has to do with the native care. I think that we end up with a layered health care system in the state of Alaska, and that I'm allowed to take care of a native here in the hospital for only 3 days, and then past that point, that person has to be moved out of here and moved to Anchorage. Even in taking care of that patient, I'm not paid the cost of taking care of that patient. And I think we get layers of health care developed that would be much cheaper to take care of that patient here in the long run than moving that patient out and away from the community. Another thing that I've seen here, and this is in my own family, is a double insurance coverage. I work for the hospital. We pay almost $500 a month for a family Blue Cross plan for myself and my wife. My wife works for the college, and they pay about the same amount for the same type of plan. So we end up with double coverage when, in our family, that's really not needed. That's money that could have been well spent for somebody that was underinsured or uninsured. One of the things that worries me about global budgeting and cost containment is the rationing of health care. And that can come about if a hospital or a facility or a physician is told that you're going to be paid X number of dollars per year, and that's all you're going to be paid. Then it's how do we ration that money to cover the hospital or cover that physician for a year's period of time, and what type of cases do we see? Now, this has been tried in Oregon, and the Oregon plan in Medicaid, you know, had asked for a waiver, a Medicaid waiver, and that was turned down by the federal government. But that was, in the first instance, some form of rationing of health care, of what type of care you would be able to get. One of the problems I've seen, and this has to do with new machines, new ideas, new equipment, is that the people in the United States tend to want the best health care and want it now and want it provided by their physician and their hospital rather than go to, in our instance, Anchorage or to Seattle. Another problem I run into is our costs now are not being paid for by the people that use the hospital. Right now, the hospital and nursing home has to dip into its depreciation money, that money that should be set back to be able to replace facilities, just to make our salaries and make our payments for our supplies and equipment and stuff that we need to operate the hospital. And as we go into cost reports and reimbursement based upon cost reports, we've had the problem in the past that a cost report will run out 2 years before we get reimbursed. So we end up paying out the money right now, and it's 2 years down the road before we get reimbursed, especially with Medicaid, Medicare. So I'll back off of it right there.
You have a semi-isolated and sometimes not available to transport for emergency and illness, and that's one of the reasons the state, and I was part of that, but provide the funds for the hospital construction there.
That's correct.
I suspect that in many cases there will be a lessening of hospital beds, particularly in the more urban areas and so on, geared more to what's really going to be predictably needed and not to overbuilding as part of the reduction. Again, the European, British, German, Canadian systems may well cover part of your concern with examination of them. They're just a bare light in the window, but examination of them in regard to global budgeting and in regard to cost care containment and how the physicians and the medical establishment responds to less funding for the programs that they're now getting. We've got to look at what's being done elsewhere for that guiding light. Again, this is a community of interest serving on this committee. None of them pretend to have the necessary knowledge. Many of us spent 12 years on the subject. I hired a physician all last winter and staff to follow this continuing group of meetings on the subject. We're all attempting to say this is the time that Alaska must step forward. And Dr. Rod Wilson, of course, has been a leader in the medical community in saying the same thing and coming up with a plan. But that's part of the reason we're here at the hearing, too, is to hear from you, to say, what's wrong and what are your fears of changed thumbs, along with what you suggest. Again, thank you. You may proceed. You have something.
Can I go ahead?
Yes, proceed.
Yeah, you know, back to quote over here. You know, I don't mean to put the group down, because I also believe that we have to do something about health care costs. It's just an absolute necessity. And I don't know that any of us have the answer, you know, or the crystal ball that we can look at and decide this is what we need to do and everybody will be saved and we'll be able to take care of the people in the nursing home at a cheaper cost or the people in the hospital at a cheaper cost. I think the only way we're going to do it is to sit down and discuss the way we're doing right now.
Mr. Gilbert, thank you for your remarks. You make some very good points. The point about the media beneficiaries being snaked out after 3 days was made by someone in the Southeast City. I think Super Lab might too, the same point.
Thank you.
Are there others in Cordova Valdez that wish to testify? Any comments from out there? Valdez, are there any comments, Valdez?
This is Dan Moeller again. I mentioned that we have a 15-bed hospital and there's no nursing home here. Just a final word that we have to rely on the city here for about one-third of our operating funds, and we're concerned about their future because the taxation base to the city is also going down. So we're very concerned about these same issues and look forward to being involved and being a help any way that we can.
I'm going to ask a staff director here, I'm going to ask Mary to get the addresses of the people in each one of the LIOs there and send Xerox sheets, questionnaires, maybe about 10 to each community.
I faxed them down.
Have you?
Yes.
If possible, in some semi-orderly fashion, I'd like to see each community have at least a small group of people fill out these forms and send them in to the task force, which is the address is on the form and on the polling device. Again, it'd be really good if you fill them out and get a few other people of interest to fill them out too and send them in. It helps us in this survey. There was somebody back here that wished to speak. Excuse me. I wasn't trying to ignore anybody. I guess I was in air, probably just moving. B, you have something? You're welcome.
May I say something about the, I'd like to read something about the inequities in the present system, if it's all right.
Yes, pull up the chair, you might have to see.
This is a letter I wrote somewhat from the. The problem of long-term health care is causing desperate situations for many people. Consider the inequitable costs in the following three situations concerning the Smiths, who are middle income, the Joneses, who are rich, and the Johnsons, who are poor. Mr. and Mrs. Smith came to Alaska 35 years ago and both taught school, retired in 1980. They owned a house worth $75,000, a car worth $5,000. They had other assets and land and $50,000 in savings account. Their monthly state pensions amount to $3,000. The wealthy Joneses came to Alaska 17 years ago, and he worked for a private company. They own a house worth $300,000 and a car worth $30,000. They have substantial savings hidden in a daughter's name. Mr. Jones's private pension of $5,000 per month is paid into a trust, which pays them $1,200 per month. The Johnsons also came to Alaska 17 years ago and have lived on his modest income of $20,000 per year. Then all three men had debilitating strokes which required long-term nursing care. Mr. Smith and Mr. Jones are in Our Lady of Compassion and Anchorage, where the cost of care is $8,000 per month. Mr. Johnson is in the Pioneer Home, where the cost to him was $800 per month. Since Mr. and Mrs. Johnson were over 65 and had been in Alaska for 15 years, they had moved into the Pioneer Home where the destitute are given preference. When he had his stroke, he was moved into the full care unit of the home, and the cost of his care is largely provided by the state of Alaska. Now we come to the point of this story. Medicaid pays Our Lady of Compassion for well-to-do Mr. Jones's care. Mrs. Jones lives in her $300,000 home, drives a $30,000 car, and lives off her private hidden income, all of which her daughter will inherit, because she qualifies for Medicaid. On the other hand, Mrs. Smith has had to pay over their monthly pensions to the private nursing home to deplete their savings, sell their old house and car and their land to pay for 2 years of care for Mr. Smith. Because his monthly income exceeds $1,266 per month, he can never qualify for Medicaid plan. Mrs. Smith is bankrupt, destitute, and homeless. Although she taught school for 25 years and saved her money, there's nothing tangible to show for. Mrs. Jones and Mrs. Johnson, who did not work outside the home, however, have been taken care of by the system. If you are rich or poor, you are taken care of. But if you are in the middle class who funded the system, you're out of luck. As Reuben James put it with his Phil Coop Charlie slogan, "Who cheat the other guy and pass the savings on to you." Mrs. Smith is in the other guy who is cheated to pass the savings on to poor Mrs. Johnson and rich Mrs. Jones. There's no moral to this story. It's all coming. 2 months ago, there was a news broadcast on a Sunday, 6 o'clock. It was on Channel 11, in which they told how rich people can get Medicaid because they can get a trust and have it all worked out in this manner. And the final statement was that in the state of Ohio, the legislature is working on a plan to hold the lawyers accountable if they give information about estate planning to people who are well-to-do so that they can get Medicaid when they really don't get, when it isn't fair. And they were thinking, I think, of, I don't know, disbarring lawyers, but some law to make the penalty pretty severe. And so in other places they have abused the Medicaid system, so they're trying to do something about it.
A good program, sir. Often abused and ruined. So they would work at the minimum of bookkeeping if they do it with integrity and utilization. If there's nobody further out there, are there comments from the people that are here in the pen in Wasilla?
I would just like to say that we're concerned for long-term care.
This is Marjorie Campbell.
Being a senior, I can be looking at long-term care very soon, and the concerns are there at the moment. I'm seeing the same horrendous bills for people just starting out in their life. And so that at both ends of our life cycle, they're just as severe.
Doctor, do you have a summation statement that you might make in a comment or two? We hope there's hope at the end of the tunnel here, but like I said, I've been on this 12 years. You've probably been on it your whole adult career. And Americans together are beginning to be concerned, as we saw with Walker in Pennsylvania and so on. It's beginning to be a factor that I think the political system will be involved in, along with the economic portion and the medical portion of this system.
Could I
say
one more thing for her?
Yes.
Mrs. Pekini, has been providing care for his mother. At this point, she stays with another lady. Do you care for her for
it?
Yeah. It costs $100 a day. And this, the elder Mrs. Pekini has been able to pay, but it is now eating into their fund. A point that they made to me, showed an inequity, is that it costs it would cost $18 an hour to get home care to help if they kept her at home. If they take care of her, all the state will allow them is $20 a day for her care.
In the court, yes.
When she had guardianship, they would allow. They would pay everything for her, but they would be allowed $20 a day for the care. It seems like something's a little wrong. I understand why private homes and private families could take advantage of the system, but there ought to be some review board that could make that a court system, and it could make that a little more fair.
Thank you. Doc, you have that.
Well, I haven't been studying healthcare financing and access all of my medical life. I've only been concentrating on that for about 4 years, and the reason I guess I didn't pay that much attention to it previously is that it used to work. Healthcare insurance in this country is said to have started in 1929 in Dallas, when a bunch of school teachers, I think it was, got together and discovered that if they paid 50 cents a week into a fund, and of course, that's not what it is now, or a lot more than, but it still is only 50 cents a week. They could fund all of their health care and hospital costs. That's where it all started, and the blues and so forth came along. And then industry during World War I started to provide health care benefits in lieu of wage increases, which were frozen in welfare in World War I, so they couldn't do it. So that's how this phenomenon, which is really just sort of an accident of history, came about, that our system in this country, healthcare, is mainly based in the workplace. I happen to think that that's inappropriate, but I won't go into that at this late hour. But the system used to work, and along came Medicare and Medicaid in 1965, and there were five, and they were good ideas, but it's been incredibly complex ever since then, and increasingly, exponentially complex now, so that many medical economists think that by the mid-90s, I'll say 1996, we will be in a meltdown situation. It just won't work at all, and that's why the task force, and as I said in the opening remarks, doesn't think that we can do anything useful by just making minor modifications to some more fundamental change. And the senator has been working on fundamental insurance law changes, like insurance law changes, so a lot of thoroughgoing changes is going to take that in order to stabilize the situation, which is exploding and in chaos.
We thank everybody for coming out this evening. Particularly thank Rod for sit the last night, here tonight, probably Barrow in a week. I can't tell if it's an itinerary. But thank you very much for coming, Dr. Wilson, and I'll check on what you're running for in a few days. He's really done a yeoman's job the whole time, from the meeting after meeting, and has been able to go back to his college too and express our concerns and express theirs back to the legislature and to the other legislative committees. Again, thank everybody for coming out tonight. This is just a continuation, bringing back to the various groups in the public and allowing for them to express their concerns too, in hopes that we can come to some conclusion. We expect it. Thank you. Good evening.
Yeah, thank you.
Rod, you want to take these and add them?
It's on everybody's mind. I don't know why.
The others will be coming here. The front wall. I'm perfectly running the front lawn. Does anybody else wish to fill out one of these forms? We'd be delighted to have them. Yeah, I want, I told Rod, why didn't he collect them tonight? He's going back to me.
Do you think I should put that in the newspaper? Dr.
Rodman?
Do you think I should send that to
the
editor or not?
I think it's so well written. They may take it. And I don't think it's too long. It's 300 words.
I
didn't
want to.
That's the
Daily News.
Yeah, I will. Yeah. And then I might want to
send it to you. Sure.
Yeah,
it's
the
op-ed
of
the news.
Oh, yeah.
Your name on here?
You know, something I forgot to mention. A whole lot of people think that 1988 law that said people could keep your house and car meant everybody. They didn't know it meant only people that really qualified for Medicaid. That's a big thing. I talked to at least five people in the last couple of weeks. They think, well, we get to keep our house and car. They said, we have more than that. Well, I said, you don't qualify.
Thank you.
Yeah.